This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Everyone was knocked out by the 19-year-old Lauren Bacall when she made her screen debut in the 1944 film To Have and Have Not. 1 year later, she married her leading man, Humphrey Bogart. They were married for more than 11 years when Bogart died of cancer. Their screen lives together included the films The Big Sleep, Dark Passage, and Key Largo. Bacall also starred in other films such as Young Man with a Horn, How to Marry a Millionaire, Designing Woman, The Shootist, and Misery. Her latest is Robert Altman's new satire of the fashion world, Prêt-à-Porter, scheduled to open this Christmas. Bacall wrote about her life in her 1978 autobiography, By Myself, which won a National Book Award. In her new book, called Now, she reflects on her life now as an older, single woman. She told me that when Howard Hawks cast her into Have and Have Not, he wanted to make her into his version of the ideal woman.
Well, that ideal was a woman who was could give as good as she got, who had humor, who was kind of a woman of the world and somewhat insolent, and actually who behaved rather like a man.
What did that mean, to behave rather like a man?
Well, that you would look, you know, if a man said something to you, you would look at him directly. And he didn't like shy wallflower types, and always with humor, though, and always somewhat suggestive that something was in the offing, something could happen. And you weren't quite sure what that something was, but you knew that it would be fun and fascinating and probably different, unusual. I mean, he had this incredible thing going on in his brain, and it worked. Because I was insolent, and he wanted someone as, he always said he wanted someone as insolent as Bogart.
In your first autobiography, and By Myself, you
in
wrote...
In the only autobiography.
Well, this is a memoir. Okay, yes. in that book you write that growing up you thought of yourself as a, quote, nice Jewish girl.
Mm-hmm.
So was there any conflict going on when you got into movies between that, quote, nice Jewish girl that you felt you were brought up to be, and this kind of insolent, assertive, sexual woman who you were playing on screen?
No, because I love that. I mean, once you're a nice Jewish girl, you're always a nice Jewish girl, you know. That basic thing never changes, I'm afraid. You never lose that. But no, I didn't think that. I loved doing that. To have an opportunity to be like that, a woman of the world, and insolent, having had adventures. Oh, God, so glamorous. Fabulous.
What did you do early on to convey the sense of mystery that your character had to have?
I don't think I did anything.
And I'm thinking of To Have and Have Not and The
Yes.
Big Sleep.
But I don't think I did anything. I think it just happened. I think it was there. You know, there are certain things in one's personality that you're not even aware that you have. There are things that a camera picks up that you don't really know about.
Mm-hmm.
And they convey a certain aspect of your personality that leads you to believe all these things that you want to believe. You know, you can read, an audience reads things into a character and a personality that they really want to read into that person.
You had something that was described as the look. I mean, your eyes were kind of droopy, and you'd look at people with your head lowered a little bit. And
yes, and I'd look up at them.
Yeah, so describe the look a little bit
chin
more
on chest.
And how you got it.
Well, I was terribly nervous during To Have and Have Not. It was quite a terrifying experience for me, and I was this kid, and I was scared to death of all these pros around me, and really had almost no experience on the stage, and certainly none in film. So I was shook when Hawk said action, and there was quiet on the set. I'd start to walk into a scene, and then my head would shake, and my hands would shake. And I discovered that if I kept my head down and looked up, my head would not shake. So I started to do that when I could, when it was appropriate in a scene. And that's how the look came about. But it wasn't that I had planned to have a look. It was just that it was a way to keep my head steady. And that was very important. Terrible to look at another actor while your head is shaking.
What did Humphrey Bogart, who became your husband, teach you about acting when you were starting out?
Well, the one thing that he taught me, the major thing that he taught me, was to think before the scene started. to realize that you had, that you came from somewhere, that something happened before you entered a scene, so that when Howard Hawks said action, your character did not begin with the word action. Your character began before then, so that you came on stage, on screen, into the scene with an attitude, with a point of view, with some weight behind you, instead of aimlessly entering the scene and speaking words. And that was a very valuable thing that he taught me.
I think a lot of people have been a little disappointed by life and by love because they compare it to what they've seen in the movies and it never quite measures up to the movie version. Before you ever really experienced love, you were acting out the movie version of romance. And then you started having the romance with the person who you were acting it out with on screen. And I guess I'm really wondering if there was anything disappointing about the real life version of it, even though it was the same two people who were doing it on screen.
The early romance was the most romantic experience I have ever had in my life, far surpassing anything that I might have dreamed of or imagined. It was quite amazing. I mean, when you are young and when it's your first love and you are just carried away by it and when that's all you can think about. And you see, Bogey was the kind of man who believed in taking care of a marriage and taking care of a relationship. He believed you had to work at it and keep it fresh and fun and interesting, and he did.
He was already a movie star to you, right?
Oh, yes,
when you worked
absolutely.
Together. So you had a sense of him as an icon as well as
no,
a man.
No, not as an icon. He was not my favorite movie star.
Mm-hmm. Did you tell him that?
Yes, he knew it. No, Leslie Howard was my favorite. Uh-huh. He knew that. But he had worked with Leslie Howard in Petrified Forest, which is funny, you know. No, he wasn't an icon when I met him. I mean, he was, because it was after Casablanca, and he was a big star, but certainly not what he is today, which is this legend, this incredible icon now. I mean, he is bigger than ever.
I'm sure you've been asked this a zillion times, but do you think that what you and Bogart were feeling off screen, you can see on screen? I mean, that the real relationship registers in
well,
the movie?
I think sometimes it does. Mm-hmm. Certainly the chemistry registers, whether it is a consummated relationship or not. I think if there is chemistry between two people, you feel it. I think that Bogey and myself in To Have and Have Not, I think having fallen in love with one another, finally, I think, first of all, it was great for me because it gave him, he wanted me to be good in it, so he wanted, he made it much easier for me to play the scenes. The feeling was so strong that, you know, originally in To Have and Have Not, his character was supposed to have a little flirtation with the other woman. And once Hawks saw the rushes of the scenes that Bogey and I had played, Bogey said to him, nobody is ever going to accept or believe that he would go off with anybody else for a second. And it was true.
Lauren Bacall is my guest, and she has a new memoir called Now. You and Bogart decided to get married. You write that he said to you that he wanted to marry you, but only if you were willing to give up going on location for a film because he didn't want you both going off in different directions.
Right.
How do you feel about that in retrospect?
Well, I recognize the fact completely that separation does not breed a happy marriage. I think you must be together. I mean, the reason you get married is to be together, not to be separated. And I think particularly in my profession, but in any profession, I think if you each go off in opposite directions, sooner or later, you're just going, one of you is going to go off and not come back. And I think that's natural. I agreed to his terms.
But you wanted so much to be an actress.
Right.
And this cut down on the roles that you could take.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I never even got the offers because I was thought of as Bogey's wife and then I would just go with him on location, which I did. And we were never separated. We were separated once only for a very short time.
Well, you know, I was thinking how in a way frustrating it must have been when he was making African Queen with Katharine Hepburn. You were there in Africa with them, kind of suffering through through all of the problems they had to suffer through. But I mean, you were there as the wife.
And I was there as the wife. I was in charge of lunch. No, right.
So
but you know,
feel?
I had a lot of frustrations mm-hmm. about my career.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times where I felt I should have been considered for a part that I wasn't considered for. Bogey had decided early on and told me from the very beginning that he would never interfere with my career, that whatever I did professionally, I would do only with myself and my agent. If I wanted his advice, I could ask him, but that he would never step in, and he never did. And sometimes I thought, well, he ought to step in. I mean, once in a while, I should be in a movie with him that one of the parts. But whatever his decision was, he was correct because he'd had enough experience to know what worked and what didn't work. And I was very frustrated at times, but I still believe, and I even believed then, that even throughout my frustration, that the choice I made was the right one. Obviously, in view of what happened, it most certainly was the right one. And I'm really happy that I made that choice.
Because your life together
was short. Well, because he had a life. He had a life that he never thought he would have. And it was very short, but imagine if I'd gone off somewhere. Well, I mean, he wouldn't have stood for it anyway, so.
After his death, how did that change for you the life you wanted for yourself professionally?
Well, unfortunately, it didn't change very much because, you know, when people get in the habit of not seeing you very much on screen, that habit kind of carries over. And I played in a movie that was very mediocre.
Which movie?
What was it called? I forgot. With Robert Stack, about the little girl with the horse and the gift of love. Wasn't very good. It was a remake, and it wasn't a good remake. And then I went to Europe to be in a movie in England, and India, which of course I loved. And that movie was quite a good movie, but my career never, you see, then I had to leave California. There was no life for me there. And so my career then shifted to the stage. Then, of course, they don't think about you at all in movies.
Right, because you're outside.
Oh, no, she wants to be in the theater. Oh, who cares? We're on to the next.
So what did you do to make it clear that you wanted back in?
Well, I just think if you just keep, hang in there, you know, and just keep working in one medium or another, I have still not gotten my choice of the best roles in the world. There are still friends that don't think of me for parts because we're friends. Well, I mean, that's life. And that's the biz.
In your first film, smoking was such an important part of the role.
Oh, right. I know, it was so dramatic, too.
Oh, yes.
So effective.
Oh, absolutely.
And romantic.
And then your husband, Humphrey Bogart, died of lung cancer.
That's right.
And you continued to smoke, I think, till 1986.
Tell me about it. No, well, I mean, because you just don't believe that it's going to happen, you know. Hopefully it won't.
Was smoking off-screen dramatic in any way for you?
Oh,
like
absolutely.
It was on-screen?
Oh, absolutely. Because if there was a pause, you know, in a conversation with anyone, you could always light a cigarette. Or if a man lit a cigarette for you, you could look up. I mean, it's the most dramatic thing in the world because it's intimate, it's suggestive, it's... And that's one of the problems with giving it up is that it's very useful. it's a useful tool.
I consider stopping smoking one of the most difficult things I ever did, but I'm thinking,
gosh,
it must have been even harder for you because you had it as a dramatic prop in a way that it never would have worked for me.
No, but you see, I mean, so you stopped and you didn't, finally stopped and I gained 20 pounds and I've been unable to lose them.
Oh, I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah, well, because, you know, your metabolism changes. Everything changes.
So did you miss the drama of it when you stopped?
Oh, yes. And then, I mean, I haven't had a cigarette in 8.5 years now, which is very good. And for 8 years before then, I was stopping and stopped intermittently about 8 times. But the fact is that when I was in Paris this year for Prêt-à-Porter...
Oh, you can't not smoke in Paris.
I was sitting in the cafe... I tell you how I resisted that, I will never know. Yeah. Because more than once I thought, boy, here I am sitting here with this cup of coffee and friends. A few people are lighting up. What if I just had one? And then I get the urge again. And the only thing I can say about it is that once you've broken your pattern, what saved me was that I just stopped thinking about it because I hadn't done it in so long.
Lauren Bacall, her new book is called Now. This is Fresh Air.